Hello, everybody. I grant that it is now Thursday, and this is not our usual Ask an Atheist. I don't know. You kind of with me on this, Becky?
I'm with you right here.
That's not quite what I was asking.
This is not our usual Ask an Atheist.
But I'll go with it. Yeah, so this is for reasons that are honestly fairly opaque to me. We didn't get a chance to get this week's episode out still. So you're going to hear what we recorded on Sunday, this Sunday, and to help tide you over until then, we thought we'd answer a couple of emails. A lot going on here at Waveform Orchard Studios, which is the name I finally picked for it, for reasons that I might explain if you ask nicely, or even if you scream at me and curse my name and ask.
Really scraping for emails there, Sam.
Yeah, oh, just a tiny bit, yeah. Last episode, by your clock, episode before last by mine, we talked about a certain law or a certain situation going on in the Swiss educational program regarding some Muslim refugees and their disinclination to shake the hands of female teachers.
Right. I don't actually recall whether they were officially refugees or just new Swiss immigrants or residents. But there were Muslim students, young teens. And our understanding was that it is traditional in Swiss educational system to greet your teacher upon entering the classroom by shaking her hand or his hand. And as, you know, was observed by these particular boys, they felt that that was an impingement on their religious sensibilities and modesty and whatnot, and got an exemption from having to do that. And that provided some tension because is this a matter of integrating into Swiss society? Are you othering yourself? Are you sort of thumbing your nose at Swiss society and traditions? So a lot of different factors going on.
And my response to this was to get all Roman judge on you guys and just say, I don't really think I like this handshaking deal. I don't know that I want to be forced to shake anybody's hands for any reason.
Right. We talked about bodily autonomy and saying, hey, if someone doesn't want to be touched or, then maybe that's something to honor.
And I also said, hey, I don't know what's going on in Switzerland. I've never been. And the only time I've ever really talked to somebody from there has been for technical things and not cultural things. So I openly admitted that I might have been talking out of my ass the whole time. Well, we've got a couple of emails, and I think we'll take them bit by bit for both of them. They're both pretty long, but we're going to keep them kind of as is because they are incredibly informational. The first email comes to us from John from Ireland, who writes, on the matter of the Muslim boys refusing to shake hands with female teachers in Switzerland, it appears that the boys stated that it was against their faith to touch a woman outside of their family. The thing is that they've chosen to settle in Switzerland, presumably to escape what is happening in Syria, to start a new life and new cultural setting. In Switzerland, it is custom and practice for people of opposite genders to shake hands. Surely, allowing these boys to be exempt from the social mores of the society they can now live in can and will only lead to separatism and exclusion, the antithesis of integration. I'm going to pause here. There's more to the email, and we're definitely going to touch on it, but I'd like to adjust this one. And I think first off for me, and Becky, I think you might be of the same mind here, is integration really what is being aimed at?
We can't know for this particular family.
For this particular government?
For this government, for this family,
right.
we're not sure. And when you say, okay, they have chosen to settle in Switzerland. Well, we don't know. Our original, story source said that these are not, super recent immigrants. These, are boys that have been in the country for a few years.
Right.
And John, our listener, writes, presumably, to escape what's happening in Syria. Well, they're Muslim immigrants from lots of places, right? I mean, they could be Pakistani. They could be from
Michigan.
Iraq. They could be from Michigan,
right?
Probably not from Michigan, but we don't.
You don't know that.
No, we don't. We don't. And so to say that, they've chosen to start a new life in a new cultural setting, that's a lot of presumptions. Maybe they have. If they are refugees.
That seems a little bit like sideshow. Let's take it as read. I want to get to the meat here and talk about integration. And I guess I kind of want to get all Futurama and go, integration doesn't work that way. You know, I mean, that's we've had our trials and travails with integration in American history. And the idea of complete cultural assimilation is not one people generally like.
It isn't. And it has shown to, you know, not I guess when you look at the history of assimilation in the United States, there's this idea of the melting pot where everyone just blends into the same kind of, you know, thing, as opposed to, you know, what really happens, which is those who don't blend become invisible through oftentimes this push-pull from both the already blended that are rejecting the newcomers, you know, through multiple generations. And that's something that could be happening. So in
well, let's
of-
take a little bit of a personal example here and talk about a topic that Christians and Jews love to talk about. And that is the assimilation of the Jews into American culture. And how a lot of people, and I'm taking a page from you when I talk about this, about how successful it has overall been to the culture in the last, 30 or 40 years.
Right. That is the case. And, you know, there's a lot of places where folks that identify as Jewish or have ethnically Jewish names will continue to be discriminated against. And there's other cases where Jewish people are completely, you know, sort of like integrated into the definition and the milieu of modern American culture. There are many people that many sociologists and sort of social commentators and that make the argument that that Jews are not at this point such a separate identity from general middle class American culture.
Right.
So that, I mean, that wasn't the case necessarily. You still had, you know, country clubs and neighborhoods that excluded Jews, Greeks. You know, this isn't, in terms of civil rights and integration, a black-white issue in our history.
Right.
So when you had sort of that dominant, you know, privileged strata of you know, multiple generation American. I mean, the Irish were discriminated against, you know, 40, 60, you know, 80 years ago in the U.S.
Were they?
Yes. And there were jobs that were not welcome, you know, no
Irishmen. I thought that was more, one, a little blown out of proportion, and two, more like 200 years ago rather than 80 years ago.
We can have more listeners that can write in and call me an ass on this one.
All right, whatever.
So in terms of looking at integration and assimilation, you know, we can look at acculturating to a new place and a new, you know, culture. But the thing is that culture is both lateral and vertical.
Right.
So by sort of lateral, we're talking about moving across spaces. So moving from a homeland to Switzerland for these particular boys, if we go back to our original case, but also vertical in terms of through time. And the idea of maintaining modesty and not of having physical contact with a woman outside of one's family is something that, for these boys at least, has been retained throughout time, generationally.
Right.
Maybe that will change, but I think that has to be something that's a little bit more organic than just saying, in order to attend school, you must shake the hand of your teacher upon entering the classroom.
Right. I mean, I think I'm on your side when you say it wouldn't it be better if they could integrate into the society that they've chosen to live in. I can definitely see the argument there. It goes back to, wouldn't it be nice if we all just got along? Unfortunately, getting along a lot of the time looks like doing what you're told. And if you're being put in a culture, or if you're being put in a situation where you are basically being demanded to change your morality for the purposes of living in a place, regardless of the validity of that morality, do you think the response to that by the person put into this situation is going to be positive? You're saying, well, wouldn't it work out better for them? I guess my question in response is, what are your expected outcomes when your integration is done being what amounts to enforcement?
I don't think that
ends up with outcomes that are positive. I think we've seen what those outcomes look like. And I hate to like suddenly get really dark and say, ha ha, you're responsible for this. I don't think this writer is. But I think people leaving Western Europe and the United States to go to, say, Syria might have something to do with that.
I think also you might be onto something, Sam, but here's the thing. What outcomes are we expecting? I think the expectation is from the wouldn't it be easier for Swiss society and Swiss school teachers to if these boys just shook the hands of their teachers. We're looking at the convenience and the upholding of a certain culture. And when we're talking about can't we all just get along, right? If you really are dedicated to that and saying, you know, they should just, you know, bend to this new culture and new society that they've chosen to live in, you know, ignoring the fact that these are 14, 15-year-old kids, right? How much choice do they have? Is, you know what? You could have a little bit of accommodation on the part of your school society. And I think that the school who originally granted these boys an exemption from shaking their hands was on the right track, was looking at that. Culture is vertical, it's lateral, and it's malleable.
Right. To continue on the email, it is interesting to note that the BBC report, which quotes the Swiss Federation of Islamic Organizations, is saying there's no reference in the Quran justifying a refusal to shake a woman teacher's hand, and that it urged the Swiss not to give in to extremist demands, whilst down the road, the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland stated that a handshake between men and women was prohibited, and went on to say, after the sex attacks in Cologne on New Year's Eve, they asked Muslims to keep their distance from women. Now they demand they get closer to them. I wonder which ones are the splitters.
Yeah, I think so. But here's the thing. When you say, or maybe you can go into that a little bit in terms of splitters.
No, I'm with you.
Okay.
Go on.
When I think that this, you know, Islamic Central Council of Switzerland is saying, hey, you know what? We had increased scrutiny after there were, you know, sexual assaults in Cologne, Germany on New Year's Eve, which I have come to understand was not wholly and largely from Syrian refugees. We're also not talking about children in school, but people on a rowdy festival.
Right.
Right. So when someone says, hey, our community in Europe has, you know, experienced increased scrutiny, let's keep our distance from women and say, hey, now you should shake their hands. I can see from an outsider's perspective why that would seem contradictory and frustrating.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying here is I would hate to be in this situation. I would hate to be this politician, and perhaps that's why I'm not in politics full stop, is I don't think I'm well encumbered to handle situations like this, if that's the right word to use. In that, I think they should be comfortable. I really do think, personally, that them being uncomfortable with shaking the hand of a woman is a weird thing. It says weird thing about gender politics. It seems like misogyny to me. But I think just affecting a hard and fast rule from as they go from one culture to the next isn't going to have the expected result of them understanding the cultural differences here. I think there could be something a little bit more. So I'm not saying that I want to do it a specific way. In fact, I'm saying I have no idea. But I do have these concerns, one about treatment of women by Muslim culture. Let's not avoid that. But on the other hand, I don't want to come down really hard on people who are from this culture as a way to vindicate my philosophies. I think a vindication of my philosophies would be finding a way to get them to understand my positioning. To basically use this as an educational moment in an educational setting. And that's basically what I mean. So I'd like to move on to the next email, because this is somebody from Switzerland. Seems, hey, you know, finally, somebody from where it's going on, right? But this is this going where you think it was going, Becky?
I think so.
I went into this with some trepidation a little bit. I won't lie.
I can't say that I myself am completely decided and confident in any of these things. So much like you, it's a messy and complex situation that has a lot of factors going into it.
But in your case, it's important to you as, yeah, I mean, because this is your wheelhouse. This is education and education of a people of a cultural minority in, you know, in the wider culture. This is kind of what you do.
It is. And when we talk about establishing rituals and routine, which is very important for child development and certainly for people that have experienced disruption, establishing those routines, such as a way to greet and start a class, day,
yeah,
are really important. But it's your student is not going to be receptive to whatever you're learning if they are so put out and so put out by that particular routine that they become defiant and become resistant to it.
Right.
You're not going to be receptive to being a classroom learner in that case.
All right, so I'm probably going to get this wrong on both counts because I am unremittingly from the Midwest. But Malek from Basel, Switzerland writes, I think your discussion about the Swiss school hit on the main points in the story, but there are some things I think I could help in your understanding. And by all means, please. First of all, you are very correct. The shaking of a teacher's hand is customary in Switzerland. It is considered a real affront if you do not do it. It's a sign of disrespect. Thus, the rule to exclude Muslims from it is interpreted by the ever so racist and paranoid Swiss people as a sign of disrespect to their culture, to our culture. What I think you missed, maybe because it was not obvious in the English news sources, was that the rule was not for some specific boys, but for the whole school. Every Muslim kid can now refuse to shake a teacher's hand. It could come as far as being the rule for the whole country. And this is what I mean, if I may borrow a phrase that I imagine educators are freaking tired of hearing, which is a teachable moment. Is I think this is where you could say I don't want to teach, and this is it. That's why maybe it went. My whole answer was, hey, what about bodily autonomy? Seems like it's sidestepping, but I don't think it is. It's like, what if somebody asks this question and they sit back and they go, huh, you know what? Forcing somebody to touch somebody else, that's kind of a weird one. I mean, yeah, it's part of our culture, but then, you know, culture changes as our understandings change. But I would say that because, you know, humanist. Why don't we just get rid of the whole force touching thing and go with something else? And I'm saying not just make it for these three boys or for all Muslim men or for all Muslim boys or just make it across the board. We're not going to do it this way anymore because it's not working out the way we thought it would. And that's kind of where I would go with that. No, I grant, answers like these seem so simple and have so many complex things hanging off them that I'm probably just going to miss, but
I think that what this reminded me of, actually, is a student's right to refuse to stand or recite the pledge or the flag salute in classrooms now.
Yeah, here in America.
Yeah, and it took, you know,
pretty sure they don't have to stand for the American pledge in Switzerland.
Right. No, in the U.S.
Yes!
All right, reel it back in, Sam.
Sorry.
So it took one family and one child who, in fact, was a Jehovah's Witness, I believe, to bring this to the Supreme Court to say, all right, then you don't have to recite the pledge and, you know, say oaths and you do not have to stand and you can't be punished for refusing to do so. And it wasn't that particular child. It meant that any student in our K-12 system could refuse to stand and recite the pledge.
Right.
Just as this might have implications in Switzerland for every student, wanting an exemption from having to shake someone's hand. So, I mean, you could say the pledge is part of American culture, but here's the thing. Being able to exert your rights is also part of American culture. So, you know, if someone wants to say we should keep the pledge in schools at all time, my personal opinions differ on that.
Right.
Then we also maintain that right for students to refuse to do that. So you could, in fact, in Switzerland, be more flexible on this particular thing and promote more understanding so that it's not an instant perception of disrespect of an entire culture.
I think Malek adds a very interesting boundary condition right after this, which so we'll continue in the email. Another thing that is often discussed is if female Muslims should be exempt from swimming classes. In Switzerland, it is mandatory to have swimming classes in schools. This is probably because we have a lot of lakes and rivers. This is being done when children are between 7 and 10, but still some parents refuse to let their daughters partake. Do you think this is fine too, or should the rights of the child to learn trump the right religious rights?
This is really complex. First of all, yay Switzerland in teaching your children a valuable life-saving skill.
Yeah.
Right? Being around water it's really good that kids in kindergarten, first, second, third grade know how to swim. That's excellent.
Right.
I am with Melek that says that, you know, most times girls can participate. In my understanding, in my observations with different Muslim families, most girls don't completely cover themselves until, you know, a certain age, you know, past about age 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Right.
Usually around puberty. And so participating in those co-educational activities would be okay. Here's the other thing, that you have actually religious leaders that have developed rules for modest dress during swimming activities.
Yeah. There is a cheap technological hack to solve this problem.
Yeah. It's like a neoprene swimsuit, basically, with swim shirts and things like that. It got what I think is kind of the unfortunate, silly name of the burkini, right? It's clearly not a burqa. It does not cover the entire person.
Right.
But, you know, but it's a swimsuit. With the advent of those particular things, like, you can go, you can be covered per your, you know, religious rules and still learn that valuable life-saving skill.
But I think the important thing here is if you're going to introduce this, you don't have to shake your hand, your teacher's hand because of bodily autonomy, and you're in this sort of this basically a cultural test of wills, is that you kind of have to border this one right away. You have to put specific lines around this right away, and you can't just sort of let it go. And this is the kind of question that you would have to answer pretty much immediately once you walk down this road. Say, look, I'm not giving you your rights because of, for specifically religious reasons, but because your religious reasons is a subset of the larger bodily autonomy reasons. So that doesn't necessarily mean that this is a get out of jail free card for everything else. So, yeah, you still have to participate in swimming classes because it would be great if you didn't drown. And there are cheap technological hacks that can help us here. But I think that's something that you would almost have to come out with right away once you've decided to go down the road that I'm setting forth here, which is, again, part of the reason why I don't do this, because I imagine there's a few chunks of this that I'm missing because this is just a way I don't think.
What I would do, actually, would be to employ the alliance of, you know, either or both the Swiss Federation of Islamic Organizations and the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland, as John from Ireland referred to in our previous email, and say, how can we get you guys on board and your community members on board with teaching this valuable skill? In terms of saying, I don't want my daughter to be participating in PE and in swim classes, you're opting your child out of an entire part of the curriculum.
I suspect you're not going to get seriously good answers out of the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland.
Possibly not.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's where this falls apart is, I'd love, you know, you can be, all right, we're going to involve all religious people in this discussion, but then you can just take the religion out of it and say we're going to involve all people, which is why part of what I meant by saying this is your religious requirements. We're not giving in to your religious requirements. Your religious requirements are a subset of your bodily autonomy rights, which we are honoring here. It has nothing to do with your religion. That's not how they're going to hear it, but if you take that position,
then it's more universal than just we are catering to Muslim people in our country and they get a special exemption. This is something that then applies rightfully to all children.
Right.
So in terms of swim classes, I don't think that if it applies to all kids, that parents should have to or be able to opt their kids out of a curriculum that is a life-saving skill. It's not a life-saving skill to shake your teacher's hand. It isn't.
Hmm.
And, you know, if that was part of a curriculum, if it was,
is evolution a life-saving skill? Are you comfortable with people being opted out of religion?
I'm actually, what do you mean, opted out of
I'm
religion?
I'm sorry, opted out of evolution.
Opted
sorry,
out of...
all of these words are getting confusing in my brain.
opted out of learning science? No, I don't think that kids should be able to opt out of learning it. I think that that learning about something is different from having to believe it, practice it, and, you know, in my high school where I teach, we have students that go all the way up through our international baccalaureate diploma program of the college level biology.
Yeah.
that will score very well on tests, know all the mechanisms that are taught to them, and still say at the end of the day, well, you know, I don't believe it because God's the creator of the world and he created it in 6 days. And the science teacher really has no recourse other than to say, okay, that is your belief.
So I think the other thing we're ignoring is that we're talking to a group of Muslims. We are acting as a, hey, we are snazzy and liberal and open edumacators. Hey, yeah. And Melek specifically refers to the ever so racist and paranoid Swiss people as a sign of disrespect to our culture. There's a whole nother like vestibule of anger that we haven't touched yet, which is people who are seeing the existence of other cultures in their playground as some sort of war.
So the mere existence of children trying to opt out of swim lessons is an affront to your entire culture.
Right.
So I kind of feel comfortable addressing that since Melek is
amongst
Swiss culture, and he is sort of self-effacing in this or self-deprecating, counts himself amongst these paranoid, racist. He's identifying characteristics of his own culture.
But we do the same thing when we say, American citizens are in Louisiana and actually here in Pierce County are terrified of the implementation of Sharia law on the United States.
Right. We're kind of self-deprecating in terms of recognizing
ourselves.
No, this isn't
self-deprecating. It's not self-deprecating. It's recognizing what's happening in the discussion. These people actually, this isn't a deprecation of the self. This is recognizing that this is an argument that is going on right now, and we can talk about Muslims, and we can talk about ourselves, but then there's this ultra-conservative group of people who, with their own wacko beliefs, who've been here the whole time, who we should probably be paying attention to.
You know what? I think you're right on that. Yes, indeed. So, what do you think?
What do I do with that? Hell if I know.
Yeah.
I mean, would the ever so racist and paranoid Swiss people, quote unquote, would they be okay with a bodily autonomy argument? I mean, if then, play Final Fantasy music, get on with your life.
I think that the bodily
autonomy...
Something
tells me that isn't going to work.
I think the bodily autonomy argument with those folks who apparently treasure the teacher handshake so greatly, that would probably be the intrusion of some other kind of philosophy that is not inherently Swiss.
I mean, maybe teacher handshakes are as important to Swiss education as the horrible Stouffer's pizza loaf hot lunch is to American education. Like, maybe it's just one of those things that if you're not a part of the culture, you don't understand what it is.
I think I don't understand the pizza loaf.
Well, yeah, you and your education with your cotillion or your barbarian hinterlands, you know.
Yeah, that's we didn't have the pizza loaf in my school cafeteria.
If you've had the pizza loaf, let me know. Join me in the pizza loaf fight. I don't know what I'm doing.
We had cheese sandwiches, PBJs.
Well, yeah, PBJs got phased out because of the
pee. Nut allergies.
Yeah, because of the pee.
Yep.
Okay, so to wrap up this email, I think to refuse to shake a teacher's hand can be seen as similar to refusing to learn to swim. While it may not be as life-saving, it helps with the kids' integration into the classroom as well as with their learning experience. A general rule can open doors to parents looking for all kinds of exemptions that can hinder a kid's education. True.
I'll return to that argument that helping the kids' integration into the classroom as well as their learning experience. That's if it's done in a way that isn't providing this absolute affront.
Yeah.
By forcing a student to do that, again, I'm gonna contend that that's gonna make a student less receptive. And especially when we're looking at teenagers, if our test case were two teenage boys, though it may have implications for everyone in the country, teenagers are by nature defiant, and in order to hone in on this defiant tendency, you know, when you cannot rebel against your religion necessarily, you're going to rebel against someone. And so with teenagers saying you must do this, there's a real possibility to become way, way less integrated.
You're having the hippie rebellion fallacy, I would say. Is that becoming a hippie and not caring about touching norms and body norms is a sign of rebellion? But I mean, when I was growing up, there were some kids who thought purity balls and being a young Republican was a sign of rebellion from their parents, who were hippies. So it doesn't have to go the direction you think it's going to go, and I think you have to be careful of that.
Fair.
Was that a cat?
Yes.
You better let him out.
He's literally just screaming from the bottom of the stairs.
Bring him up here.
Meow. Hey, Starbuck. He's totally freaked out.
All right, close the door and come back.
He ran right down.
It's not every day you can hear the cat meow from downstairs.
Yeah.
He's pissed off.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, one more email. This is Dan from Idaho who writes, "My mom was a public school teacher until she retired a few years ago. And the longer she taught, the more time she spent at work. It drove my dad and me crazy. I would frequently head for bed before she got home. It's interesting to hear it happening the other way around. Sam." Or, well, why don't you say this?
Sam, go home.
All right, yeah. Well, I'd like to say that the fundraiser for the studio was it a success? I actually assume it's a success.
It was successful, cautiously. We still do have production costs, studio costs, and so we are still accepting contributors to those who want to meet Peggy's challenge.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to stop sending money if you can.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing that really actually does keep us going.
We do need it. But the reason I bring this email up last is because this is the last, I mean, we haven't been live lately, but this is the last Same Week episode you're going to be hearing for a while. We are going on one of our occasional breaks. You will continue to hear new programming every week, but we have a lot of interesting things, a lot of amazing and interesting things that are happening to us, you and me in particular, all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And that are literally turning everything around me up in the air. And so I kind of need to focus on that. I also have this political rally coming up in June.
June 29th in Olympia.
Yeah, and I need to do a lot of stuff for that. So you will be hearing from us in bits and pieces here, and you will be continuing to get full episodes every week like you normally get, except for this week.
Hey, Sam.
Yeah?
Go home.
Yeah, I think it's time, isn't it? I think we convinced no one of anything.
Should we shake on that?
I think so. These are really good emails, and they provide background that I didn't otherwise have. I don't think my answer is any smarter, but at least I feel like I have a better handle of the context.
I think so.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Also, you nearly said fellatio in the last part.
I said fallacious.
Okay. You started saying fallash, and then you spoke again, and you're like, I think you're falling for the fallacy.
I was going to say fallacious hippie fallacy.
Okay.
And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Keeping this.